G'day, Tom Uren here, and in this edition of Between Two Nerds, the Gruck and I discuss cyber war, why we hate the term, what it actually means to be in a cyber war, and what cyber operations contribute to modern day warfare. I start by asking the Gruck, why do you hate the term cyber war?
So the term cyber war, I seriously dislike, because it's sort of like, it's not really a thing. It takes the idea of war and sort of transports it over to cyber and says, like, somehow this is going to be just like we have in the physical world, except computer magic stuff. Essentially, like, you get like all these academics and policy and like the cyber pundits coming up with the ideas of what cyber war should be. And they put forward these ideas of like, it's going to be taking out the electrical system, or making hospitals like burn to the ground, or these various things. And they say, like, this is cyber war. Like, this is the cyber version of a war.
Yeah, I think as you talk, it really occurred to me that what I dislike about it is that it takes war, which is this all-encompassing thing, and tries to just squash it into the cyber domain and say that that's a thing. Whereas the nature of war is that it's an all-out confrontation. You use every single tool at your disposal, and cyber operations are one of those tools, but they're not the only tool.
We don't say that Russia is involved in a land war, an air war, and a naval war. You know, it's not, they're not in three wars with Ukraine. They're in a war that has these different, you know, means and aspects.
Yeah, and one of the things that occurs to me, and probably to you as well, is that people will ask my opinion about Australian defence spending. I mean, people probably don't ask you about Australian defence spending, but they'll say, we're spending an awful amount on submarines. I think the latest figure is north of $50 billion Australian dollars, which is a lot of money for Australia. And they'll say, wouldn't that money be better spent on cyber warfare capabilities instead? And I'm always very disappointed when I have to reply, look, I think cyber capabilities are additive rather than replacements. So maybe we shouldn't be spending $50 billion on submarines, but we still need to spend at least some money on submarines, and cyber capabilities will give us something else.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. One of the things that reminds me of, actually, is when the British were discussing their defense spending, and there was this sort of pushback on spending money on troops. And, you know, basically, I think it was Johnson, or it might have been someone else, but it was an idiot. That doesn't narrow it down very much. But anyway, one of those guys was saying, basically, like, we're just going to put that money in cyber. And like, we don't need to put it into troops and tanks and all this stuff anymore, because we can just do cyber instead. And one of the defense guys said, cyber can't hold ground.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point. Just like you can't get rid of your troops and buy more planes, or get rid of your planes and buy more submarines, you need that and. It's you know, it's a yes and. Like, do we need $50 billion in subs? I don't know, but we also need cyber.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So some interesting news that came out today, we were just chatting about before, was in the Washington Post, they have a deep dive into the beginning of the war. And one of the things that they say in the report, and let me just quote from it, military communications were completely paralyzed. We had to work through informants. So this is related to, partly it's related to the Russian hack of the KASAT satellite. So communications and satellite networks were down. So that's a pretty good example to me of how they're combining traditional electronic warfare with a cyber operation to get a more complete effect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But with one or the other, they don't get quite as far.
Right. So I think that is that's sort of not necessarily the perfect example, but it's a perfect example of how, you know, war with cyber can exist, right? Is that you have all of these things that you're trying to do, and cyber can help you achieve some of those things. So if you want to paralyze the communications of your opposition, you can, you know, use your e-war capabilities and jam their radio signals, but they're going to have email. So you can also use your cyber to disrupt their communication links via, you know, the satellite in this case, or, you know, you could wipe their email servers or take out their IRC servers. These are things that you can do that help the war effort that can be done with cyber. Similarly, when the war started out, they did this huge attack against all of the air defense systems. You know, like there was this wave of missiles that the defense analysts, they have these like missile and rocket guys who are expecting, you know, this huge tens of thousands of rockets and missiles showing up, which didn't happen. There's a lot of things that didn't happen that all of these defense analysts in every single sector have been very upset by, right? Like the missile guys are expecting a huge missile wave. The cyber guys are expecting a huge cyber attack. Navy guys were actually expecting an entire, you know, naval invasion as well. Everyone was disappointed, I think, in their predictions failing. But what you did see was attacks that met the strategic needs of the Russians at that point. So when they went after the air defense systems with missiles, they also went after them with cyber, right? When they were trying to do, decapitation attack against the getting rid of the existing leadership with the military and the politicians, again, what they did was cyber attacks to disrupt both the links and then also all of their comms and other systems that they had locally to understand what was going on. And I think one of the clear signs that this was a Russian objective is how in the propaganda that they put out on day one, you know, in the first few hours, it said that these things had happened, and it put them in ways like, the leadership is completely paralyzed and, you know, unable to communicate with people. And, you know, the air defense systems have completely collapsed and don't even exist anymore. So these were objectives that they were trying to achieve, and they did that mostly with cyber in some cases, and in other cases it was combined arms. So we absolutely have to see cyber as a like an additive. It's part of a complete balanced war.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can't just have cyber for breakfast. It's going to go straight to your hips.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a new facet of warfare. So it seems like we 100% agree that cyber operations can contribute to strategic goals. They can't, or military goals, but they can't achieve them in and of itself, or very, not very often. So then I guess an interesting question to ask is, if there was cyber war, what would it look like?
So I think the nature of cyber is not the same as the nature of like kinetic or nuclear. So we have like the nuclear strategic environment where the goal of war is to never have one. Like the point of having your army in a nuclear strategic environment is to convince the other side never to use their army, right? Like that's the goal. That's not true in kinetic war. Like the goal in kinetic war is to beat the other side because you want your war to succeed.
Ah, right. So when you talk about a nuclear army, you mean the nuclear forces, I guess.
Right. Sorry, like the missiles and all that stuff. Yeah. So like the idea in a nuclear strategic context is you want your forces to make the other guy not want to fight. That's the objective, which is not like that can be the objective in the kinetic strategic domain, like in the strategic environment of the kinetic world. Having a large army can be used for coercion, or it can be used for invasion, or it can be used for defense, or it could be used as a source of corruption or whatever. Like it has value other than just scaring the other side. Cyber is again a different environment, right? Like you can't coerce people in the same way with cyber. You can coerce them, but not in the same way as like if you have a huge stockpile of cyber, you're not going to be able to be like, I'm the 800-pound gorilla. That's not going to intimidate people. Unlike, you know, if you've got a huge stockpile of tanks, you know, it doesn't translate in the same way. It doesn't have the same effect. And I think the issue is because it's a completely different strategic domain that has different things. So it has access to the cognitive domain, right? You can change how people think, and that can change how they behave. That is very powerful, and you can do that without necessarily being in war.
What I thought you'd say when I asked about cyber war is what's happening in Iran and Israel right now.
Oh, is there something happening there?
And I think that's really interesting to explore what's going on with...
Right. There we see a state-on-state action. So in many ways, we are now actually talking about a strategic conflict between states that's being carried out in a specific domain. So if you want to talk about cyber war, I think the absolute closest thing to what the cyber pundits envision and what we can agree is, you know, very, very close to sort of real conflict is this cyber war that is happening in Iran, like the predatory sparrows. And also, I guess, all of the other attacking groups that are going on along with the predatory sparrows, but primarily the work that they're doing, where they've got this physical impact that's happening in the real world.
Yep, yep.
That's got all of the things that people want.
Yeah, yeah. So my understanding is that the first event, and it probably isn't the first event, but the first one I'm aware of is that Iran tried to fiddle with Israeli water, I think by even poisoning it. And then there've been back and forths. Predatory Sparrow has done some destructive attacks. We spoke about a lot of this last week, but just to quickly summarize, they've attacked steel mills. Another group released material from one of the worst prisons in Iran. So actions, disruption of trains, disruptions of the Iranian fuel subsidy system. So, yeah, I 100% agree that is the closest thing I've seen to what I would call a cyber war, this kind of back and forth, mostly using cyber operations.
Yeah, and I would also include, I think we could call it the guerrilla cyber war of the Belarusian cyber partisans, because they have also done these physical attacks. And they've also done leaks and so on. And these have all been very, very political. I mean, their objective is to change the regime. Like, they're not trying to make money or trying to just have lulls or whatever. It's very clearly, all of this is politically motivated, which is, this would make it politics by other means, to quote a Clausewitz. Everyone drink. Here's the thing, is that could we call that a cyber war when the Belarusians are not retaliating in cyber? They're not able to. So it's very one-sided. So you could possibly call it a cyber massacre because only one side is suffering the impact.
What I think,
it's not really a war.
Yeah, what I think is interesting about both those examples is that it seems like there's kind of a lid on the conflict escalating. And in the Belarusian case, the lid is that the cyber partisans, like, they're a hacktivist group. They don't have an army. I'm sure the government would respond with violence if they could find them, but that's kind of the lid. And I'm just wondering about the Iran-Israel case. So part of that conflict, at some point, the Israelis used a remote or robot-operated machine gun to assassinate an Iranian nuclear scientist. So that's spilling over into real world. I guess that's a deadly attack, right? But there must be something that's stopping it from spilling over, escalating into a full-on war.
So I think the conflict between those two states has been going on for so long that adding new dimensions doesn't necessarily change the dynamics fundamentally. Things that would change it fundamentally would be Iran becoming a nuclear state.
Right, yeah.
That would shift it into a completely new alignment. But until then, this sort of, you know, we're going to fund our proxies to attack and kill your guys, and you're going to put remote-controlled robots to shoot our guys. Like, that's a sort of...
business as normal.
I don't want to say, like, that's table stakes. But that's just, yeah, like, that's how it is. That's That is the state of play as it has been for, you know, decades now. It's not going to change just because someone's computer is
connected. So I guess in that example, there's an ongoing low-level conflict and cyber operations are just an added dimension to that.
Absolutely. I think that's an important thing to sort of take away as well, is that when people talk about cyber as being escalatory or not escalatory, they don't think about it in context. It's always, you know, like, would cyber by itself do a thing? And they're always creating this idea of like cyber as a sort of siloed thing operating in a vacuum outside of political context.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's where they go wrong. So you could say that, like, look, cyber is not escalatory. However, if the US cybered the Kremlin in some massive way, then it would be escalatory, not because it was cyber, but because of the political context in which it was happening. That's sort of like the US is taking a direct approach to engaging in some active action against the Russians that would upset the Russians, you know, and they would take that as an attack. Now, it wouldn't need to be cyber. They could, you know, assassinate people or something. You know, it could be another thing. And you could say, like, assassination is escalatory.
Yeah. It's kind of the consequences.
Right. It's
yeah. It doesn't matter if you cyber them to death or poison them to death.
Some way. And it doesn't matter what they're using to escalate.
Yeah. So it's sort of a case of asking the wrong question. I guess to push back on that, though, perhaps you could argue that the kinds of things you can achieve using cyber operations tend not to be escalatory. So perhaps stealing information. I don't think anyone thinks that just espionage is escalatory, right? So that's the bread and butter of cyber operations going back whatever. I guess what's changed is the capability of states to do destructive things. And the predatory sparrow examples, they're doing destructive things, but they're also kind of stepping back from that line by making it clear that they're not hurting people.
Right. Like, I think you're correct in that. And I'm not saying that, like, cyber is the same thing as assassinations.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the analogy to covert action works as well. It's not an analogy, but that's kind of what role it can play.
That's what it is. Yeah, and you know, you can have covert action during war. Like, you can have saboteurs, you can have special forces operating behind the line, you can have resistance operations, you can have covert operations that are part of a war effort. You can have covert operations that don't cause war or don't happen during war. Or you could have covert operations where the point is to be seen.
I've often thought of cyber operations as like having invisible ninjas. And so if I guess in the case of Stuxnet, if the Stuxnet operation required real people to infiltrate the Natanz nuclear facility and blow things up, that would potentially be escalatory because they could have been shot and killed. And I think Iran would have had every right to shoot and kill them, right? But because it's a cyber operation, there's no one there for that to happen. And that makes it hard to... makes it hard to be escalatory in a sense, perhaps.
Right. And I think one of the other things that we should remember is that escalatory to a degree depends on how the public reacts to something. So in the US, for example, well, in the West, for example, the public does not see cyber operations as having the same impact as physical operations. So when you complain that China stole all the IP, people don't think, well, we need to invade them. Like, this is outrageous. They've gone too far. It's sort of like, oh, China being China, or gee, those guys steal everything. This is bad. They don't think that, you know, there needs to be a political or, you know, a nation state response of some sort. And that, I think, is worth keeping in mind, is that, like, the Iranians DDoSed Wall Street for a day. The U.S. would not be able to go to its population and say, we're invading Iran. You know, like, they DDoSed us for 24 hours. This is unacceptable. You know, we're general mobilization. We're calling out the draft. This is the big one. Like, it's just, it's not going to work. And that would be different, of course, if there was a bomb on Wall Street, right? Like if there was an actual physical attack that achieved the same thing, maybe without casualties as well. If you could replicate that in the physical world,
telephone exchange. So I guess the scenario there would be September 11, except with hacked autopilots instead of terrorists. I think the subsequent invasion of Afghanistan would still have happened.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think one of the mistakes that people make is to look at cyber as a separate thing, different from the real world. Right, this idea of like, oh, that doesn't count, it's only online, or, you know. So on the one hand, cyber is special in that it's got its own unique properties and its own strategic context and environment and all that. But on the other hand, it's very much part of modern society. It's just that's how we exist these days, right? Like you can't get away from the fact that like you keep in touch with your friends over, you know, cyber systems. Like you use WhatsApp and Signal and Twitter and Facebook and, you know, Instagram and all these other things. Like that's just part of real life. You know, people don't go and hang out in bars to pick up people anymore. They use apps. You know, it's like cyber is part of the infrastructure of society. There's no getting away from it. And in that sense, it's very, very real. You know, it's not a separate thing divorced from reality. It's part of how we exist.
At this point, we've talked about the reasons why we don't like the term cyber war, and that's because it takes something that's all-consuming, a war, and tries to just squash it into the cyber box. We've also talked about how there are cases which we would, I guess, call a cyber war, but there's something else that's keeping a lid on that conflict and confining it mostly to the cyber domain. And that seems like a great place to end today's chat. So thanks a lot for another great chat, Grok.
Excellent talking to you as always.